Welcome to episode 220 of the Various Sundry Podcast. I am your host, Matt Harmon, joined live from the Vault Studio, the beautiful campus of Grace College and Theological Seminary, by my good friend, my colleague, my co-host, and the man who is ready for some March Madness, John Scott Sloat.
Doc, what's happening?
Well, it's finally here. We are at that time of year.
It's been a while since we've been in the studio.
It has, yeah. So
when was the last time?
Last week of February.
Yeah, and we're here.
So the last two episodes were virtual.
So it's been 3 weeks, basically.
Yeah.
How you doing? Been a good 3 weeks?
Has it been a good 3 weeks? We've recorded in here since Jake got engaged. So yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out what's in that 3 week.
Oh yeah.
Category. Unfortunately, it's been filled with some sickness there. It's worked through the family.
Yeah, you've come down. You've been playing hurt.
I played hurt last week, and I'm still playing hurt this week. So.
Wow, that's quite a dynamic bug.
Yeah, it's you know, I even last week went to the doctor to get the Tamiflu on the early side, thinking, okay,
we'll wipe this out.
We'll tackle it.
Nip it.
And the congestion's still hanging around, and the fatigue as well. Like, not like the ache, you know, but like the just the general lack of energy. So
you, if you appear sour and a little shorter this week, it's the illness.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, I didn't intend this to turn into a complaint about Doc's life session, but I'm on the couch, right?
Welcome to On the Road with John, talk radio hour.
Yeah, so my spring break was filled with grading, so it really wasn't a spring break.
What were you grading?
New Testament Expo notebooks and Bible study series.
Okay.
So 37 notebooks.
Wow.
It's a big class. And 16 Greek exegesis papers, which, as you know, are substantially long.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
30 pages.
Yeah. 25 to 30, right? Yeah. They're stupid long. Now, yeah. I grade like 1 to 2 a semester.
Yeah.
So not a big deal for me.
No, but cranking through 16 of them.
Yeah.
It's a bit much. So and then I'd forgotten I don't think – our chaplain Brent listens to this. I had forgotten I was speaking in chapel the first day of spring B, which comes obviously after our spring break.
Wow.
Until he called me a week before saying, hey, just want to make sure you're good.
Oh, 7 days. He gave you 7 days.
Oh, yeah. So also did that while I was under the weather from the flu. So, yeah.
What else is going on? I mean, what else would you like to bring to the table today?
I think that's good. What's new in John Sloat's world?
Man, I feel like anything I say now would – I mean, things are going well. Then I think I was on the road last week. I was home.
You were home. You work from home.
That's right. Everybody else was gone. That's why. So
that's right.
Had Charlotte in there. Went to Charlotte, Greenville, and Atlanta. Those were all good visits. Been hanging out in Fort Wayne a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
Trying to work my way into like Fort Wayne things.
Okay.
So got a list of galas to go to last week.
Galas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got some prayer meetings to go to in Fort Wayne that I'm looking forward to.
Hmm.
Should be interesting.
All right.
But yeah, other than that, I'm going to Columbus, Ohio this weekend.
Does that mean you're visiting the mothership?
Yeah. I'll be there Sunday morning.
Okay.
Yeah. And last time I was there, Father Hess did not preach. And I've texted and made sure that Father Hess is preaching.
Okay. Yes. Just to make sure there's no confusion, it is not a Catholic church.
That's right. It's
that's an affectionate nickname, not an actual title. He is not a padre.
Yeah. He's Protestant.
Yes.
And he was our student body chaplain when I was a student, so we called him Father.
There you go.
Which at the time he was celibate.
Okay. All right. Wow.
That was for Nate in Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll appreciate that. So if you'd like to contact the show and say something about anything that John Sloat just said, you can find us on X at VNS Pod.
Yeah.
You can find us on the old-fashioned email, variousandsundrypodcast@gmail.com. We are on Facebook. We are on YouTube. And we would love for you to leave a 5-star rating and a review. So, all right, John, let's talk sports.
Okay. Yeah, it feels like the big thing that's out there is college basketball.
Yeah.
Bracket, was it Selection Sunday? Did you watch the Selection Sunday show?
I did not.
Neither did I.
I was at our small group.
Yeah.
I've not looked at I've not done a deep dive yet into the brackets.
I've done a cursory look.
I have seen some of the outrage on Twitter.
The Big East is pretty upset
about teams that people think should have made it and didn't, or vice versa. That happens every year. Every mm-hmm. year. You get this. But it does feel like this year, from what I can gather, that there's even more frustration with the use of what they call the net rankings, which I guess is one of the metrics they use they seem to be particularly skewed towards some of the blue bloods and especially punitive towards mid-majors or even like, for example, Michigan State getting in. Some people are like, they got in because they're Michigan State, not because their resume really warranted them getting in.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's going to be these discussions every year. What I fear is that people will leverage this to, well, let's put 128 teams in, like that we're just going to keep endlessly expanding this till it means nothing, kind of like they're doing with the college football playoff, which I didn't even put on the rundown, but we can talk about that if we want. There's more time to talk about that another day.
We have months. We have summer to get through still.
Yes, yes. So we should mention the bracket challenge. There will be a link in the show notes today where you can sign up.
Yep.
We already have about a dozen at this point. We're recording on Monday afternoon. In past years, what do we have? We have 30?
30-ish, yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to see that many and more.
Yeah.
This will be the fourth bracket competition. We did not have one in 2020 because of COVID.
Right.
So 21, 22, 23, 24.
Okay.
That's our fourth.
Okay.
You won it one year.
Did I?
So we've had
– Did I win? I thought I came in like second.
I thought you won it. Didn't you win it? And then we maybe gave the book to the second place finisher?
Maybe. That sounds right. That sounds right. I just really like that it sounds like I won it.
yes. So we encourage you to sign up. It is set up so that – you have until Thursday at noon, correct?
I believe so.
Like you don't have to pick the Tuesday and Wednesday play-in games.
No, I don't think so. No.
So you can wait to see who wins those if you want to tweak your entry. But as we've done in the past, the winner gets to pick one of my books that I'll sign it and we'll send it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, even if I had done my bracket stuff, I wouldn't be ready to give away the secrets of my bracketology. So, have you? You've said you've looked at it, but you've not made your picks.
I've done a cursory glance. I mean, I think I always look for like what team got in this year that doesn't normally get it. I think College of Charleston, was on there. Samford, I think, made it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I think so. A few others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other – well, did you watch any of the championship weekend from like
– I absolutely did not.
I mean, one of the biggest stories was North Carolina State
winning the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
They won five straight games. They were not even any remotely close to any sort of like at-large bid.
Hmm.
And they went in the ACC tournament and won it.
You know, there's a guy in my small group who went to NC State.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you who after.
All right. And then the other big story, I believe the school is Long Beach State. Did you hear this?
No.
They fired their coach the Monday before the conference tournament.
Ugh.
And he agreed to coach them in the tournament. They win their conference tournament.
Wow.
And are now in the NCAA tournament, even though the guy got fired. So, you know, there's those kinds of stories that are just fun.
We should also mention the Grace College men's basketball team won their opening, I guess, two-round.
Yeah.
Bubble? Is that what they were calling them?
Pod.
Pod? That's right. Bubble is a COVID thing. their opening pod, the first game was a little scary.
It was the weirdest 20-point win I think I've ever seen.
They were down at half, right?
They were down at half, and as late as like halfway through the second half, they were down six. And then they went on like a 20-0 run and flipped the game and ended up winning by around 20.
Yeah. And then their second game.
Absolute domination.
40? They won by 40?
They were up by as much as 50, I think, at one point. They won by like 44, 45, something like that.
And I think their first game is Thursday? Is that right?
That's correct. Out in Kansas City against Northwestern.
Okay.
Not the Northwestern in Evanston, Illinois, playing in the Big Ten.
Right, right.
This is Northwestern College in Iowa.
Right. And not Northwestern in Minnesota, because there's also a Northwestern in Minnesota as well.
Yes, this is the Iowa version.
You know, I'm speaking in chapel on Tuesday.
I did see that, yeah.
And
Tomorrow or next Tuesday?
A week from Tuesday.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And that's the day that the championship game
will
take place, regardless of whether Grace is in or not.
Right.
I have looked at flights that would leave after when I speak in chapel and would get me to Kansas City in time for the game.
And would this be a work-related trip or a personal trip?
Well, you know, that's the question.
I see.
That's that's the million-dollar matzo ball out there.
Could I work in a visit with a donor in the KC area, though that's not really your area?
If there were an alumni event out there, you know, show up, work the alumni event.
Yeah. Well, I probably shouldn't say that. I'll tell you off the air.
Okay. Love secrets.
I just want to be careful about saying something that I was told that I'm not sure if it was in confidence or not. So I should just be safe. In any case. Congratulations to them. Great crowds this last weekend with Grace there. And
do we want to mention NFL free agency at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You want to talk about it?
Did the Jets do anything?
Yeah, so the Jets revamped their offensive line. So they signed the left guard from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So he came over. And then we traded for Moses, I think is the right tackle from Baltimore. We traded for him. So we got two offensive linemen. And then we got Tyrone Smith, the left tackle for Dallas, was a free agent.
Okay.
And was supposed to get a ridiculous amount of money, and his market just fell. And the Jets were like, we'll take him. So the Jets will have a mostly brand new offensive line.
Okay. Are you worried at all that any of them will serve on Aaron Rodgers' staff as vice president?
You know, I would be more worried about that if most of them had played with him for a long time. All of them are at least under a year.
Okay. So when Aaron Rodgers serves as vice president
– by the way, that'd be the most Jetsian thing of all time because our owner did serve as Donald Trump's diplomatic ambassador to Ireland. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Woody Johnson, owner of the New York Jets, was away for the team for 4 years because
he was – As the ambassador to Ireland.
As the United States ambassador to Ireland. Yes. And when he won South Carolina, the Jets owner is right behind Donald Trump. Woody Johnson. Yep.
There you go. So, I mean, are you worried that Garrett Wilson might be his chief of staff when Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, that's a good question. That'd probably be the one. I mean, but could you see that being like the most Jets thing ever? Way to lose your star quarterback is
yeah.
He ends up the vice presidential running mate
for RFK.
For Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah. What a world. What a world. That's about as close to politics as we'll get on this episode.
Yeah, it was very sports related.
Very sports related. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing that caught my attention, obviously, is the Bears traded Justin Fields to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. After they signed Russell Wilson as their quarterback. So what's the plan there?
Well, I don't know.
Is there a plan? Because Russ—
I mean, everything from what I hear, they've come out and said Russell Wilson is the starter. That they're not even going to have any sort of like competition. Like it's Russell Wilson's job.
Is the idea like play with Russ for 2 years, let Fields develop behind him?
I guess.
And then when Russ gets – once a new contractor is too expensive for you.
I guess.
Ship him off and
I'm just not convinced that Russell Wilson at this stage in his career is any better than Justin Fields.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like it seems like Pittsburgh is saying that to ease Russell Wilson's ego.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, he can be the starter, but three games into the year and he stinks. The fans are going to be clamoring for Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. And I think Mike Tomlin's the kind of guy that would probably, if he's like, well, we're 0-3 and Russell Wilson's terrible, let's put Justin out there.
Yeah. I did see a report that Russ flew commercial to Pittsburgh for the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that was a big deal for Russ, apparently, to fly commercial. But you know where you're going. You know, it's a blue-collar city.
Yeah.
You don't fly private there. You fly commercial. I think he still flew for first class, which isn't great either, but better than flying private.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all sorts of movement going on. I beyond what we've mentioned.
Beyond the scope of this podcast.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, not that interested.
What's going on with Ohio State football? Anything? Not at all. That was just throwing out Ohio State football.
There was a development last week.
What happened?
Did you not hear about this?
No, not at all. Maybe. No.
Ohio State's running backs coach.
Okay.
Left to take the same position at that school up north.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, drama.
Yes.
Who's the new coach in Michigan? Do we know?
It's the offensive coordinator, Sharon Moore.
Is that the guy
who's
like the interim?
Was filled in for Harbaugh during his suspension.
It feels hard not to give him the job after
yeah.
He won those games, basically.
Yeah. So that's the big news from Ohio State football. And
it feels scandalous.
It is. And the fact that word apparently was that it came to light that he had been negotiating with Michigan for this position for like a few weeks.
Wow.
And so now they're terrified that, you know, they brought in Chip Kelly as the offensive coordinator and he's putting in new stuff.
Yeah.
And now they're terrified that basically
this guy has the playbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or probably memorized.
Or pieces of it. Yeah. I believe this report is accurate that they're actually going in. Into the IT department is going in and tracking his – like looking back and seeing what he accessed in these last like couple of weeks.
He got to.
To see what he might have taken with him.
Wow.
What a world we live in.
Man.
What a world. All right. There's more we could say, but Ohio State did name the interim guy for basketball, Jake Diebler. They fired Holtman back in the middle of February. Diebler took over, took him to a 6-2 record, totally turned the team around. So they officially made him the full-blown head coach.
And they didn't make the tournament, though, did they?
They did not.
NIT?
They will play in the NIT. They probably were one. If they'd have won on Saturday, on Friday against Illinois, they would have been in that conversation for the bubble.
Rick Pitino and St. John's refused to play in the NIT. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think that's dumb.
I think it's stupid too.
Just play. I get, you know, you hear these other coaches talking about, well, we're gonna stay out to focus on roster management, because basically the transfer portal opens today, which is another incredibly stupid decision.
Should be after the tournament, right?
Should be a couple weeks after the tournament. Yeah. Like, what's the urgency? These kids can't enroll this semester anymore.
Yep.
So there is no urgency. It's just dumb. The NCAA is dumb with a capital D.
Yep. In this area, and I mean, not to bring this to politics, but the NCAA just got sued by 15, 16 athletes over Title IX violations related to Leah Thomas. I don't know if you've been following that story, but that's been very interesting to watch develop. And also, she swam for Penn. He swam for Penn. I don't know. I don't know what to say or what to do. That person swam for Penn, and there's no chance that Penn has good athletics, right?
I wouldn't think so.
It's Penn.
I wouldn't think so.
Anyway, let's move on. Didn't intend to go there. That's not on the rundown.
It is definitely not on the rundown. All right, John. Ready to move on?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So today we're continuing our series on resurrection in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And we are going to look at our second text. Last week we looked at Isaiah 26, and this week we will look at a longer text, Ezekiel 37.
And this is probably, I don't know, is this the classic resurrection text in the Old Testament?
This one and next week's
are
the two most, like, I think if people can point to a passage about resurrection in the Old Testament, they'll point to either this one, Ezekiel 37, or next week's passage, Daniel 12.
Okay. All right. Well, do you want me to read?
Let's do it.
Okay. We'll read Ezekiel 37, 1 to 14.
Yeah.
Sound like a plan?
Yep.
Okay. First one. The hand of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out in the spirit of the Lord and set me down in the middle of the valley. It was full of bones. And he led me around them, and behold, there were very many on the surface of the valley, and behold, they were very dry. And he said to me, Son of man, can these bones live? And I answered, O Lord God, you know. Then he said to me, Prophesy over these bones and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord God to these bones, Behold, I will cause breath to enter you, and you shall live. And I will lay sinews upon you, and will cause flesh to come upon you, and cover you with skin, and put breath in you, and you shall live. And you shall know that I am the Lord. So I prophesied, as I was commanded. And as I prophesied, there was a sound, and behold, a rattling. And the bones came together, bone to its bone. And I looked, and behold, there were sinews on them, and flesh had come upon them, and skin covered them. But there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, Prophesy to the breath, prophesy, son of man, and say to the breath, Thus says the Lord God, Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe on these slain that they may live. So I prophesied as he commanded me, and the breath came into them, and they lived and stood on their feet, an exceedingly great army. Then he said to me, Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel? Behold, they say, our bones are dried up and our hope is lost. We are indeed cut off. Therefore, prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God, behold, I will open your graves and raise you from your graves. O my people, and I will bring you into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am the Lord. When I open your graves and raise you from your graves, O my people, and I will put my spirit within you, and you shall live, and I will place you in your own land. Then you shall know that I am the Lord. I have spoken, and I will do it, declares the Lord.
All right. That's a lot.
That might have been the longest passage we've read on the pod.
It might. It might be. But worthy.
Oh, absolutely. Good passage.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's helpful just to remember Ezekiel is a prophet prophesying in the midst of Israel's of Judah's exile.
So in Babylon.
In Babylon, yes. He was part of the second wave of exiles that the Babylonians took from the land of Judah and brought them back to Babylon. That's the 598 crew.
Okay.
Yeah, 605, 598, 587.
Yeah.
Those are the three deportations.
It's always interesting because those BC numbers always go down the later they get, and it's always like a little confusing.
Yeah. So Ezekiel came from a priestly background. He is prophesying to the exiles in Babylon. And in this particular section, there's a lot going on. In fact, you can make the case that really – Ezekiel 34 through 37 is one of the most significant sections in the book. You've got a lot going on with God promising to bring his people back from exile. What's distinctive here, though, in Ezekiel 37 is the connection to resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, on first glance, you know, you look at this and go, oh, this is some sort of like, you know, it's a metaphor, it's poetic, it's, mm-hmm. You know, this idea of the dry bones and a picture of the spiritual deadness mm-hmm. of the people. And yet it's pretty clear, I think, you know, once you get past even the sort of the prophetic vision in the explanation, when God says, behold, I will open your graves and raise you from your graves, O my people, and bring you into the land of Israel, that something more than just there's this current group of Jews in exile in Babylon, and mm-hmm. he's going to bring that group or part of that group back.
Yeah, it feels much broader than that.
Yes, much more universal in scope.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But still his people, like yes. still clearly talking about his people.
Yes, yes.
Not totally universal in scope.
Yes. And what's furthermore is – it seems like that this is connected to just the larger – this larger conviction that the Jewish people had that God's promises were of such a big and massive nature
mm-hmm.
that God must intend to – raise his people from the dead to experience the fulfillment of those promises, those who died before their fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of those texts that seems to confirm that, that, you know, it's not just a New Testament perspective looking back, though you do get that perspective in Hebrews 11 in particular, that there's this idea that God has always intended to raise his faithful saints from the dead so they can experience the fulfillment of his promises. Hmm. What are some things that stand out to you as you kind of read through the passage?
Oh, my goodness. Well, even though I do think this is, like you said, talking about actual resurrection, like that definitely seems to be in view, it does seem to be talking about salvation as well, like bringing things from death to life. I wonder what you make of the use of spirit, wind, and breath sort of in the passage. Those, if I remember my Hebrew correctly, are similar, even the same word. And how do you see that interplay here?
Yeah, so spirit and wind certainly are ruach.
That rings a bell.
Yeah.
A faint one, but it does ring.
And that, you know, there's even, you know, Scripture I think often plays on that ambiguity. That, you know, even Jesus, and what's interesting is that there's even in Greek, there's a similar sort of dynamic with pneuma, which can mean spirit or it can mean like wind or breath. And there's clearly an intentional wordplay on that in John 3 when Jesus uses the imagery of the wind. The wind blows wherever and, you know, basically you can't see it. You can only see its effect. So is the spirit basically. And, and what Jesus is doing there in John 3 is drawing on that overlap of terms. And, you know, you see it actually in Genesis 1. You know, when you read Genesis 1 at the end of verse 2, I believe it is, where it talks about, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Well, that word for spirit is ruach, and it could instead mean wind. The wind of God was hovering over. That doesn't make as much sense, I don't think.
Sure.
And so that ambiguity is something that Scripture capitalizes on regularly. But, you know, you think about even the creation account, right? How does God create? He speaks.
He speaks.
In essence, he not that he has physical form, but he breathes out words and things come to life. And so it's striking here in Ezekiel 37 that he tells Ezekiel essentially to do that.
Yeah.
Speak, prophesy to the wind, like call for the spirit basically to give life to these dead bones.
What are we to make of Ezekiel being called the Son of Man throughout this passage? Like, I think this has always struck me. Like, that's always a term I've reserved for Jesus. And yet here it's applied to somebody else.
Well, and this is where I think you just have to pay attention to how a phrase is used in its context. Daniel uses that term specifically of an individual, a Son of Man figure in Daniel 7. But here in Ezekiel and throughout Ezekiel, it has more of the sense of just it's a reference to a human being, a mortal. And so I don't think when he calls him Son of Man, he's not using it in a title or anything like that. It's just basically human being.
You're human. Yeah. You're human.
Mortal.
So it's kind of like sons of Adam, daughters of Eve from Narnia. Similar sort of.
It's a way of stressing the humanity of the person.
Okay. Final question. Why this valley of dry bones? Why an army? Like why not, you know, families or a nation or a priest or you know something like that? Why an army?
Well, I think it fits with the creation mandate: be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. So I think the notion of an army is getting the both the dominion but also the taking action to exercise control.
That subdue language.
The subdue language.
Is often implied militarily.
Yes. And again, I don't think it's God is raising up a physical army to do, you know, physical battle in terms of killing, but it's exercising dominion over creation and over the spiritual forces of the new creation. And so I think I think that's part of what's going on there. I also think, and this is where the connection to exile shouldn't be missed, because when you know, I think most people when they hear the term exile, and even when they read here, right, I'm going to put you back in the land.
Yeah.
What they fail to do is make the connection back to Genesis, where exile from the garden was the culminating curse of their disobedience. And so I would suggest that not only is this intended to talk about Israel's restoration to the land, but this is rooted in God restoring humanity to its intended Edenic and beyond condition. And so it's broader than that, which is why I'm tying it to sort of new creation language here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, especially when you tie the promise of the Spirit to other texts here in Ezekiel, like people may be familiar with Ezekiel 36, the chapter before, right? The idea that God is going to put his Spirit inside of his people and cause them to walk in his ways.
Yeah.
So they'll be unlike Adam. They'll be redeemed, renewed human beings. And I think that when you capture that dynamic, I think you see it as part of the larger biblical storyline of God transforming a people, not just bringing them back to life in terms of physical life, but making them spiritual people, not spiritual in some sort of generic sense, but like Spirit-directed, Spirit-empowered people. And I think that's how you have to connect what's going on here in Ezekiel 37 with earlier chapters here in Ezekiel as well.
And does this get connected in the New Testament? Is this passage brought up?
Well, I think that
or at least alluded to?
I think this is in the backdrop in Matthew 27, in the weird story where at Jesus' resurrection, Matthew says basically like some of the Old Testament saints came out of their graves and walked around the city.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's Matthew's way of saying Ezekiel 37 is happening. This is the promised restoration. This is the promised resurrection. At least a sort of first fruits.
Yeah, partial, near fulfillment, whatever you want to.
And I think before we move out of Ezekiel 37 here, one of the things that should strike the reader is the number of times where God says something like, "And you shall know that I am the Lord." Like all of this he's doing all of this so that it's evident he's the one doing it.
Yeah.
That he receives the glory. It's not because God's people are anything special in and of themselves.
Yeah.
It's because of the magnificence of God himself that he is doing this. He's doing it to bring glory to himself. And so I also think, by the way, this helps explain even the question in Acts 1 where in the interim between Jesus' resurrection and his ascension, those 40 days as he's teaching them about the kingdom, they ask him, "Lord, is it at this time that you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel?" I think they're thinking, well, Jesus rose from the dead. Resurrection equals restoration.
Yeah, yeah.
Is now the time, Jesus? Like, is this it?
And are they going, Ezekiel 37 is literally go, like an army is going to be raised up. Is that what?
I don't know if they're seeing.
They're not
that.
Going that far.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think the question is generic enough to leave ambiguity. I don't know. But it's what's striking is that Jesus doesn't say. He doesn't answer the question yes or no. Classic teacher move, right?
Yeah.
Is now the time? And he's like, it's not for you to know. but hang around in Jerusalem till the Spirit comes.
Yeah.
Which seems in one sense like a non-answer, but it is an answer because, you know, again, part of the picture here, resurrection and Spirit are intimately connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's saying, hang around for the Spirit to come and then you'll have a better sense of what's going on.
Hmm.
All right. We should move on, John.
Okay.
Time now for This Day in Sports History.
This Day in Sports History, March 19th. March 19th, 2024. We are just pressing on through the year.
Cruising through.
Moving real quick. March 19th, 1950, U.S. Open Women's Golf, Rolling Hills Country Club, Babe Diederskin. I don't know if I got that close.
Diederskin.
Okay, and that was only the first half of her last name. Zaharias. Zaharias wins by 9 strokes from head of the amateur, Betsy Rawls.
Okay. Doing the research for this, I was stunned that there was professional women's golf in 1950.
Well, I almost made that comment, and then I started trying to pronounce that person's name. 1955, 17th NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, San Francisco beats LaSalle 77-63. Don's future Hall of Fame center Bill Russell is named the tournament's most outstanding player. Bill Russell. 1960, 22nd NCAA men's basketball. I get the feeling we're going to have – oh, this is the
this
only
is
one.
This is the only one. Okay. Only one.
Men's basketball championship. Ohio State beats California 75-55. Buckeyes future Hall of Fame forward Jerry Lucas is named tournament most outstanding player.
That is Ohio State's only national title in men's basketball.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. 1960.
Yep.
Jumping into the future, 1984, two-time Cy Young Award winner, Denny McClain is indicted on charges of drug trafficking, embezzlement, and racketeering. And he gets a 25-year sentence that's later quashed.
Yeah. Had you ever heard of Denny McClain?
No, maybe.
Pitch for the Tigers.
Okay. So his sentence got quashed.
Mm-hmm.
So did he pitch again?
No, he was long retired by then.
Okay. 1995, one day after announcing his return to the NBA, Michael Jordan took the floor against the Pacers, Indiana Pacers, still to this day the highest rated regular season NBA game in history. In his first game in over 18 months, Jordan, of course, played 43 minutes, but shot just 7 of 28 from the floor, and the Bulls lost 103-96 to Indiana in overtime.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember hearing the announcement and then being dragged along to go shopping.
Oh, and you missed it.
And I missed the game. It's
wow.
Very sad. Very sad.
1996, Orlando Magic guard Anthony Bowie records a bizarre triple-double. The Orlando Magic were leading the Detroit Pistons 111-91 with just a few seconds left in regulation. Bowie, who was starting in place of injured Nick Anderson, was having a great game, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, as a Pistons player shot the ball, avoiding the shot clock violation. Most of the players started walking. Oh, boy, to their respective benches, but not Bowie, who pulled down his 10th rebound of the game and called a timeout with 2.7 seconds left, allowing the Magic to devise a play that could give him his 10th assist. Detroit coach Doug Collins was livid, understandably, calling a timeout with a 20-point lead just to drop a play to pad someone's stats was not the definition of good sportsmanship. Collins ordered his team to walk off the floor and to not be a part of it. This allowed Bowie to catch the ball uninhibited at the Orlando basket. Bowie dished it to David Vaughn, who slammed it down as time expired. That bucket gave Bowie the first and only triple-double of his career, 20 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists.
There's a bit of a backstory there, but...
There's a lot of story there. A lot of story there, but...
I can't imagine that happening today. I just don't think that would happen.
I could imagine... Maybe 5 years ago, I could imagine Russell Westbrook calling a timeout in order to get the triple-double. But I can't imagine somebody walking off the floor and just letting him get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. Who do you like out of that, John? I'm guessing you're not going with Babe Diedrichsen Zaharias.
No, I can't. I don't want to have to say it again, let alone check the spelling when we type it in. I'll go Anthony Bowie.
Okay. I will too.
That's an odd one.
It is.
That's very odd.
It is. Yeah. All right.
By the way, I love it when losers morally grandstand.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are we on one thing I like?
One thing you liked. Okay.
There we go. Oh, goodness. I think I mentioned that already. I think I mentioned that I watched the Dune movie, didn't I?
You used that one.
I used that one. Oh, snap. Why don't you go first and I'll go second this time.
Okay. Well, mine's pretty straightforward. Just a great weekend of Grace men's basketball.
Mm.
The Friday night game, stressful the first 30 minutes and then pulled away. But great atmosphere in the mock. And then the Saturday game, another great atmosphere. Just fun to see that place packed out. And then Saturday after the championship game, there were a good number of alumni around, including some guys that you would recognize.
Who's that?
Dayton from St. Louis.
Ah, Dayton.
Yes. And Tannen from Elkhart.
Yeah. Yeah. I know those guys.
And Josh. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where he lives, though. Somewhere.
I think in Michigan somewhere.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that crew.
Nice. That's a good group of guys.
It was.
At least they were, you know.
They still are.
I assume. I know Tannen still. I keep tabs on Tannen. Less on Daryl, less so on Josh, but.
Dayton.
What'd I say?
Daryl.
Dayton. Sorry, Dayton.
I don't know that he listens. But and then Jake and I stayed Friday night after the Grays game and watched the second game. And that was an entertaining end.
By the way, you know why that game started at 5 on Friday?
Yes, I do. Tell our audience.
So that school, we were talking about it. It's Washington Adventist School.
And they're from the Washington, D.C. area. Like
yes,
Maryland.
They're from Maryland.
Yeah.
They are an Adventist school, and so they cannot play after dark on Sabbath, which would be Friday sunset.
Yeah, so Seventh-day Adventists basically stick with the Jewish Sabbath in terms of the work and play restrictions.
And so they had to finish that game before the sun set.
Yes.
And so we played it at 5 rather than 6.
And did you know that had they beaten Grace and played the next day, they would have pushed the game until 9:30 on Saturday night. So they – because again, the Sabbath as they understand it
– Sunset to sunset.
Sunset to sunset. So Friday at sundown, Saturday at sundown.
That's wild.
So, you know, for a number of reasons, it was good for Grace that, you know, that
they took
won.
Care of business.
Yeah, they took care of business because that would have been tough. But yeah, great weekend of Grace basketball. Sad that it's the last time we're going to get to see some of those guys play at the MOCC. But just a great group.
I have my one thing. You ready for it?
Yep.
Andrea and I have started watching this show called The Middle. Have you heard of this show?
I feel like I have, but it's not ringing a bell in terms of like what it's about.
So it's about a middle class family living in southern Indiana, just south of Indianapolis.
Okay.
And it's about their life. They have three kids and trying to make ends meet and sending kids to college. And
what do they say? What suburb of Indy?
It's a fictional town called Orson. Okay, Orson, so, Indiana.
So it's a fictional show then. It's not like a docu-series kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely fictional. But very, very funny. Clearly Protestant, you know, clearly like they're going to church on Sunday, but like they're like, well, why do we go to church? Well, we're Protestants. That's kind of what we do.
I see. Okay. So is it a comedy then?
It is a comedy. Deborah from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
She is the mother.
Oh, okay. Which I believe she is actually a believer in real life.
Catholic, yes.
Yes.
And the husband is the janitor from Scrubs, if you know that show. I never watched Scrubs. Okay. But he's kind of this – he works a stone quarry. He has guys that report to him. He's, you know, they eat out too much. I mean, it's a very like middle America kind of show.
Okay. So is it – how much of it is – I mean, surely, obviously, since it's a comedy, there's some poking fun at things.
Yeah.
But do you feel like it's – mocking?
No. Because
Parks and Rec, which I love, one of my favorite shows, like it's clearly mocking at some level.
So all – at least the main characters are from the Midwest. The character – I can only think of her name from Everybody Loves Raymond. Patricia Heaton, that's her real name.
Yeah.
She's from Ohio. Mm-hmm. The husband's from Illinois originally. So they're Midwest people that they got to play this show.
Uh-huh.
There might be a little mocking, but they do I think they do a good job of representing middle America. So they're like trying to make ends meet. Like, how do we afford XYZ? How do we do this? How do we keep a car running? You know, they're both working like three jobs.
Okay.
So – It's a good show. It's funny. It ran up until – it had like an 8-9 year run.
Huh.
And it ran until 2015.
Oh, okay. What platform?
Amazon Prime.
Oh.
It's on Freevee. So everybody should be able to view it for free.
Yeah. Commercials thrown in there, but yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. All right, John. We've talked about a few of my problems.
Yeah, we had a little therapy session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about college basketball and NFL free agency. We have talked about Ezekiel 37 and resurrection. We have talked about Anthony – we're going with Bowie?
Bowie? Oh, Bowie?
Bowie?
I said Bowie.
I don't know. And we have talked about – it's called The Middle.
The Middle.
Okay. And we've talked about Grace basketball. And so I think – by definition. Before I say that, don't forget
the bracket.
Sign up for the bracket competition.
I just got a text from somebody about it.
There we go. Sign up for it.
Need to send that out.
Get in there. Get a chance to win a free book and a chance to demonstrate your basketball knowledge superiority over the two of us, which shouldn't be difficult, let's be honest. All right. So I think by definition, we have covered our various and sundry topics. That's left to say is, until next time, the Lord bless y'all real good.
Later.